I'm Ellen Mary.
And I'm Michael Perry.
And he's a plant geek.
And she's a plant addict.
And this is the Plant-Based Podcast.
This is more than just a gardening podcast. We'll be exploring the world of plants from every possible angle. We'll be talking about plant-based diets, plant materials and fabrics, the well-being qualities of plants, and giving plenty of gardening tips and tricks.
So we'll be chatting worldwide to companies and individuals that are being creative with plants in new and exciting ways, from fabulous flower crowns to foliage-filled lounges,
botanical moisturizers to bamboo clothing.
It's all here.
And it's all made of plants.
This episode of the Plant-Based Podcast is brought to you by our friends at VeggiePod. Their integrated raised vegetable garden bed kit makes growing vegetables easy for everyone. With self-watering features and protective canopy, with VeggiePod, you'll be harvesting your own produce in no time. Available in three sizes to suit any garden. Visit veggiepod.co.uk and enter PBP10 for a special discount as a PBP subscriber.
So today we are going to indulge in the world of roses, and we're here at Peter Beale's Roses in Attleborough, Norfolk, with Ian Limmer, who is the nursery manager here. So, first up, tell us the story about Peter Beale's Roses, how long it's been in existence, the whole journey, and your part within there.
Okay. The company started in 1968, and last year was our 50th year. I joined the company in 1976, I think it is. If my math is right, I've worked here for 42 years.
Wow.
When I first started with Peter, there was just four people, and now we've got over 50 staff working here.
Mm-hmm.
When I started, I was weeding and watering. I'm still weeding and watering today, although, you know, nursery manager. But
your hands are freezing, by the way, when you came out.
That's right. It is very cold today, isn't it? But that's all part of it. But, so I started when I was 16. And within 2 months, Peter asked if I'd want to go to Chelsea Flower Show.
Oh, he saw potential in you.
Must have done. I don't know why, but he did. I went to Chelsea, and it wasn't a career move of thinking I'd go into horticulture, because I wanted to be a mechanic.
Okay.
Like a lot of 16-year-olds did. Mm-hmm. I also wanted to join the fire service, but as I was only 5'6", I was too short. So
you haven't stood up yet, so I'm
not
sure.
No, that's right. You know, with age, I think I'm 5'5" now.
Yeah.
But, Peter said, you know, would I like to go to Chelsea? And then he also offered me apprenticeship and said, you know, would you like to join us? And so I said, yeah, I mean, I love the outside work, outside life. So, within, the 3 months, I was a full-time member of the team, so to speak, although it was only four. And then I started at Eastern Agricultural College and went there for 3 years and did my apprenticeship, and slowly started. We started off at Swardston, and we moved to Attleborough, I think, in about 1981 or 82, which then we had about 10 people. And like I said, now, you know, there's just over 50 of us. As we've just been talking about a little while ago, we've just now had an exciting extension added, you know, to the nursery.
Yeah, so see lots of building work going on today.
Exactly, yeah. And I think it's going to get bigger and bigger all the time, so yeah.
Were you interested in roses at all before you started here?
Not really, no. I'll be honest.
That's a big confession.
Yeah. But obviously, I just thought a rose was a rose sort of thing. You know, there's so much to know about a rose, you know, how it grows, how it's bred, the height of it, the width of it. Does it like a shady position? Does it like a sunny position? Soil conditions, etc., etc. So as each year went past, you know, and each summer, you see all these wonderful flowers coming out. And you say, cool, I go into that one to smell that one. That one hasn't maybe got a scent, but the beauty of that is within the foliage and within the plant. Another one might have a, you know, lovely fragrance, but it might not flower quite as much as the other one. They're all individual.
Uh-huh. And this is because you guys have been breeding your own varieties for many years as well. Is that how you would have then selected those? Tell us a bit about the journey of some of the roses that Peter Beale's have made from scratch.
Okay. I think we've probably launched about 75 to 80 different varieties over the years, and we tried to launch one or two a year. Okay. And that process is very difficult. What you try to do is to pick healthy varieties so that there's no, hopefully, very little disease within the parents. So you cross-pollinate those. Every year, we cross-pollinate probably about 3,000 different crosses, which will give us about 50,000 seeds.
Mm-hmm.
So every year, we will plant 50,000 seeds.
Wow.
And it takes about 10 years by the time you've done the first cross to launching a beautiful rose at Chelsea Flower Show, because you are looking all the time for something slightly different.
Mm-hmm.
You're looking for perfection. There's a better word, I suppose, but there's always something within that, like 50,000 seeds. You know, there'll be some that look very similar to other things, so they're taken out, and a little bit of mildew or black spot, they're taken out. Weak growth, some of them will be very tall and leggy, and as they flower, then they would then fall over, so you think that's not perfect. So out of those 50,000... you'd probably bring it down to about 10 plants.
Wow.
That's amazing. So this year, when you release your new roses at Chelsea Flower Show, they were first sown 10 years ago.
Probably, yes. Might be able to bring them out about 7 years or 8 years.
Uh-huh.
If something is really outstanding, you can bring it forward a little bit. But yes, they've got to be, first of all, trialled with it. Within the glass house. I saw about that.
Let the
nursery manager in action.
Yeah, the walkie-talkie's turned off now.
You just wanted to look busy.
That's right.
Busy and wanted. Okay, so, talking about show gardens and Chelsea Flower Show and the like, you obviously create absolutely stunning show gardens.
Thank you.
Of which I've been very lucky enough to see many, as is Michael and many others, I'm sure. So this year at Chelsea, what's the plan?
This year at Chelsea, we're hoping, you know, to get 26 gold medals. So we've done 50 Chelseas. Last year was our 50th year, and it would have been lovely to have got our 25th gold medal on our 50th year, which we did. Which was great.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much. Thank you very much. Our stand's in roughly about 10 metres by 10 metres, which is quite a large area to, you know, put the plants on. We're now here mid-February. The roses that we're preparing for Chelsea have been selected around September time. They've been potted. So we have about 3,000 roses potted and put in glass houses to make 1,200 of the best of the 3,000.
Okay.
Either 1,000, for argument's sake, you know, have flowered a little bit earlier and some haven't got enough flowers on them, and then maybe the other 1,000 will flower a little bit later. So to try and get, you know, things perfect, you know, so we pick and take up about 1,200 roses. Now, they'll vary in height, anything from half a metre up to about 2 metres, 2.5 metres. Climbers and ramblers will be 2.5 metres. And then what we do is we come to Chelsea with a blank canvas and we put arches up, pergolas, walls, etc.
Your rose arches are always beautiful.
Thank you.
And the fragrance on your stand is always absolutely stunning. I've got a picture from Chelsea last year. Actually, it's one that you took, Michael.
Yeah.
Where I'm standing underneath one of the arches this, because it's glorious. Just so beautiful. All the colours and fragrances and different varieties.
It's and you'll be launching new varieties there as well. I want to ask you a little bit about the naming, because how do you decide what to name a rose? Because sometimes people are choosing the rose by the name, not necessarily the colour these days, is that right?
Yeah, sometimes trends have changed no end in the last few years, but a lot of people do, you know, choose the rose, you know, for specific reasons, anniversaries, names and...
Silver anniversary.
There we go. Happy anniversary, many happy returns, Mum and a Million, Valentine Heart and so on. You know, when we're actually naming a rose, sometimes we'll have people come up to us and say, could you name a rose for us? We think carefully what it's going to be. Last year, we launched two roses. We launched Fragrant Celebration, which was to celebrate our 50th year. So that was a climber, amazing scent, good repeat flowering, sort of an apricot-y, sort of a peachy colour.
Gorgeous.
Grows to about 8 to 10 feet high. Lovely, that was very nice. And the other one, which was a lovely red rose for Ely Cathedral.
Nice.
Okay.
That was, I believe it was their 100th anniversary. Sometimes we'll do it, you know, for charity. Other mm-hmm. times, sometimes pay. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we have to, you know, charge.
I really think that Ellen Mary lends itself very well to a rose.
If you've got...
Michael so just rolled.
Fame hungry.
It's not about fame. It would just be my own rose.
Breed your own and make it yourself.
I wouldn't know how. But it was actually Peterbilt's roses that got me into roses in the first place. I was never a massive fan.
Mm-hmm.
And we moved into our cottage about, it was 11 or 12 years ago now. And I had some roses. They were covered in black spot. Hadn't been looked after so well. I pulled them out and never replaced them anywhere okay. in the garden. And then I came to Peterbilt's Roses, and it was in June, and I walked out the back where they're all on display, and the fragrance and the colours was simply overwhelming, and it was so beautiful. I walked away. I think I had four roses. I can remember that I had blue for you.
Yes, that's fine.
And blue for you. So that's kind of like a greyish, bluish, lilac-y kind of colour, very beautiful. And Carisia,
yellow one.
Yellow, beautiful, and the fragrance of that's stunning.
Yeah.
And Rose Albertine, which I bought after my Uncle Albert, who got me into gardening in the first place. Mm. And ever since then, I've been totally addicted to roses. It's your fault.
Well, well done. Well done. I mean, when you came into the nursery, I suppose we're a little bit different and special in a way, because we have over an acre and a half of really well kept roses in the gardens.
Yeah.
There's over, I think it's about 600 different varieties of roses, and over 3,000 actual plants in the garden. So you can imagine, when you came out of the back of the garden centre, not only did you have the gardens smelling nice, we have over 30,000 roses in containers.
Yeah.
And June was a great time to come and have a look, because although we have a wonderful catalogue with, you know, 1,100 different varieties, it's nice to actually, yes, you can see the pictures, but actually to come into the nursery, have a wander
have a
cup of tea, and wander around and see things that you really, you know, really like, and say, I think I like that. But we've also, not only have you got these pretty labels telling you about it, the knowledge of the staff here.
Yeah, you can ask, and everyone knows. There's always an answer. It's
and
really
you wouldn't
great.
Get that in a standard garden centre that have a range of different plants, would you?
No.
So,
and what was great was walking around the gardens that you've got here, you see roses interplanted with other perennials.
Yes.
So often you think of growing a rose on its own, or growing it in a container, or growing it up a wall. You don't necessarily think about using a rose within beds and borders with other perennials around it, and actually they grow really nicely with clematis as well, don't they?
Yes.
And your garden's a great example, and it's quite inspiring to see that, because then you think, well, actually I can achieve that in my border at home, you know, even in a small space. So it was just a lovely visit. You know, I kind of went away smiling, and I bought I think I bought Silver Anniversary for my mum. But talking about the name, sorry, going back to what you're saying about the different names,
still trying to get one name.
I know.
Call it Ellen.
I bought my bare root roses over the winter period for the allotment, and I wasn't really sure what ones I wanted. So to be honest, I went for the names, and I bought three roses, and one of them I specifically bought because it was called Tequila Sunrise, and that's
lovely.
The reason why
that's
I bought it. I mean, lovely colour.
It's a really nice rose though,
but I just loved the name, so and that did draw me to it because I loved the name, and so I bought it. So I think that is something, you know, people do look at that, don't they?
But on the other hand, I'm kind of thinking, how important is celebrity in there? Like, if a rose is named after a celebrity, is that as appealing as it perhaps used to be, or not?
If you're going to... sometimes at Chelsea Flower Show and Hampton Court, you're having a launch, and if you can, you know, name a rose after celebrity and they come there, then you get a lot of publicity.
Yeah,
it
but
really
for the
does
long-term
depend,
success
the long-term,
of the...
Not
yeah,
necess-
it's
not
more about the PR
it's
at that
the,
point.
It's the moment in time.
Okay.
You know?
But the roses that have, like, the charitable names, like Rose... Is it Macmillan?
Macmillan.
That probably does well all of the time.
Yes, it yes it does. You know, a lot of people, you know, have Macmillan nurses close to their heart. You know, it's also a very good rose as well, because... Sometimes rose breeders bring out some roses. Sometimes it's not always something new. It's like everything in life. Sometimes we think the latest model of cars or something, you think they're better, but sometimes you think, well, the older model was slight, you know, was slightly better. Yeah. But
bringing your mechanic side into
it. Yeah, I don't know why. Yeah. Believe me, my mechanic skills, I'm glad I wasn't a mechanic. They weren't very good at
all. You're much better at roses.
Yeah.
What about, because we were talking just before we came on mic, that I've been in Japan doing lots of lectures at Barakura English Garden, and it suddenly, when I walked in here today, I remembered they sell Peterbilt roses. And I said to you, Ian, didn't I, have you been to Barakura? And of course, you've been lecturing there for many years, so you've got experience of how people use roses in Japan. But I want to ask you kind of almost the bigger picture. How do you see the way that people use roses in these different countries? Is it the same as we do here, or very, very different?
Well, going to your first question, for the Japanese market generally, a lot of the gardens are a lot smaller, so they tend to do a lot of planting in pots. And not only do they have, you know, roses, they'll have all sorts of plants within the pots and have them within their on the terraces and so on. It really does depend. Also, we have different varieties, things like the teas, the noisettes and chinas. They do like a hot climate, so therefore, you know, like the south of France and places, Italy, you know, the teas and chinas do very well, you know, over there.
But would they not do well in England?
They still do well.
They would as well.
They need a little bit more protection.
Okay.
The most important thing is, you know, if you're growing roses in a hot climate, and they will grow very well, you know, choosing the right varieties, but having that water, you know, things will dry out, can dry up very quickly.
Okay, so
roses
do
love their, the roses love their feed and their water. Mm-hmm. So as long as you've got a drip irrigation system within a pot, within the ground, and plenty of water, they're going to thrive.
Because in section two, we will talk more about how you can grow roses at home, not just in a border, but also in patio pots, because I think we don't do that much in the UK, and we will touch on that more in the next part. But I want to talk a little bit about what I feel to be a competitor to a rose in a garden. And it's a plant that people are growing a little bit more of around the place. And it's... can you guess what I'm going to mention or not?
No.
No?
Do you feel nervous?
I feel very nervous.
Well, you might think I'm totally crazy, but I think that tree peonies...
Okay.
...can hold their own against roses because they've also got big flowers. Blousy flowers that are very glossy, silky petal, double as well.
Yeah.
The fragrance is akin to a rose, fruity, layered fragrance.
Okay.
The bush is very kind of handsome, branching. You get 100 flowers at any one time and they're more mature. You don't get the pest and disease that you get with roses necessarily. You don't have the thorns that are going to spike you. So what do you think? Tree peonies? Can I win you over with a tree peony or two?
Why not have a mixed border of tree peonies and roses?
Oh, that's a very political answer.
There are all so many different types of plants, and there's, you know, room in the garden for all sorts. And what I do like to say, as you said earlier, about having different herbaceous plants and perennials mixed with roses. So, you know, same with, like, tree peonies. Back in the 70s, a rose border used to be, you know, for argument's sake, 5 metres by 5 metres, and you'd have 40 roses in there, nothing else. And that just doesn't... It worked back in then, but, you know, we're now, you know, thinking, why not have, you know, different structures to it? Because when the roses have finished flowering, and in the winter, if you've only just got a pure rose border,
it can
be very much like sticks, and it doesn't look right. So, hence, mixing with herbaceous and tree peonies.
So I feel like roses have still got their place, but let's just work with them more creatively than we perhaps have done in the past.
Yes, yes, exactly.
When are we going to get the blue rose?
We're not. I didn't even think about that. I don't know. Of course, we might do it. And then, you know, with the black rose and so on. I don't think the genes, and it's just not within the plants. I could be wrong. Because I'm not a scientist.
Are you sure, though? Are they not hidden in Japan?
Well,
at some companies, like
not real blues. They tend to be more purples.
Yeah, but there's a few GM ones around.
Is there? I haven't seen them. I beg your pardon.
That are not allowed to come into Europe because you've got the blue, the true blue carnation, which is bred by Suntory, the big brewery company in Japan. And I think they've also been looking at a blue rose as well, but we hardly ever see those on our shores because of how we feel in Europe
it
about GMO.
It would have to be GM, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would.
In nature, there isn't a true blue. Even with insects and animals, you don't get a true blue because it's not there.
But some of those different shades are lovely as well. Blue moon.
Blue moon. The rose is lovely, but that's sort of like a purple colour. Mm. The scent is really nice, but sadly, it's not a healthy rose.
Okay.
A lot of the pinks and the whites tend to be more health. You start messing around with different,
You're going to forsake one for the other.
You're going to have that, like Blue Moon would be lovely, I think, for probably about 4 years. And then it just generally tends to get weaker and then you end up taking it out.
That's good to know, isn't it?
And same with some of the dark red roses. They are very, very temperamental. Mm-hmm. Almost black to start. There's some really lovely old-fashioned ones like Louis XIV, Francois Dubray, Eclair, very dark. And nice art shrubs. But again, with those, within about 4 years, unless they're fed and really worked at, they can cause problems. So we can still get your blue rose in here, but that might only last a couple of years.
So it really, when you're selecting rose, there's so much to consider. So
yes,
disease resistance, fragrance, vase life, garden performance. Because the problem I always have is, when you buy roses in a supermarket or in a florist, they've been selected for vase life over fragrance, haven't they?
And
it's so sad to not have that fragrance.
Yeah,
and
but even so, when we are breeding roses, and like I said, we have 50,000 seeds roughly a year. They're not all scented. You can still cross a scent rose with another scented rose, and the little babies, the little seedlings that come out, none of them might not be scented. We all want perfection, so we're looking for perfection all the time. Continuous flowering, disease resistant, beautiful colour flowers, arching, etc. The list goes on, and it just doesn't always happen. So we do launch roses that don't have scent, because there's not all the time, and sometimes the ones with scent don't flower quite so much as the ones which are beautiful and floriferous, within the garden.
But when a customer buys that, surely you're buying a rose because you want the fragrance, or...?
Yes and no.
Yeah.
Yes, of course you want to come in, to look for scent, but there's also... There's parts of the garden where you will want, a scent, and like I said, they're not all good continuous flowering and so on. The more continuous, generally, they tend to be not quite so scented, but they give you a real good show within the garden. We want everything, and you're saying...
Perhaps, we need to start looking at roses differently, that there are a myriad of uses for them in the garden.
Help us.
Yeah, of course. I'll get my overalls on.
That's it.
I do have a passion for roses, Michael,
Passion for all plants, darling.
I know, but I do really love them. But I didn't love them until I went to Peter Beale's Roses. So I feel really privileged to be chatting to Ian.
Yeah, I mean, if I think back to my grandma, like, roses in those days were not quite grown as elegantly as they are now. Like, they used to look like these gnarly old plants that kind of probably weren't that well pruned or looked after.
Left to do their thing.
Yeah, but these days it's interesting to learn that you can have shrub roses that are part of a border. You've got those lovely big cupped flowered ones as well. It's not all about the hybrid teas. Of course, ramblers, climbers, but also there's
the dog roses?
Dog roses, yeah. But there's also a new breed called a decorator rose, which is like... It's got a very sort of vintage, shabby, chic look to the flower, but it's like a ground cover type. So it's almost like the old dog rose, but in a more restrained form. Really beautiful. Also, we've talked about colours a little bit. Some of the colours that are available now. No true blue.
Is there going to ever be a true blue? I doubt it. But I love the really vibrant colours of roses. Mm. So the real bright pinks. I love those.
That's why you wore the tequila sunrise.
Tequila sunrise is that bright yellow and orange, isn't it? And I love the fact, you know, how enthusiastic and passionate Ian is about breeding. He knows so much.
Definitely. Well, his life has been roses. It easily could have been citrons, as we heard. But he chose roses over citrons, which is great, you know.
I'm pleased he did.
But we've got so much else to learn about roses and how to care for them in the right way, because in part two, we'll actually find out that you don't have to panic about the way you prune your roses.
Yeah.
ways to get them to last longer as well in the garden.
Yeah.
Why roses that you buy in the supermarket don't have a fragrance and why.
Yeah.
And how that is a crying shame. And a whole lot more. What else are we going to learn?
We're going to learn... I can't remember.
I knew you weren't looking at your notes or anything. Sorry,
well,
I wanted to catch you out.
Dreaming about roses. I know that we may put a photograph to Ian that he might not like.
Yes. And I don't think he's seen it before, actually.
So in part one, Ian here at Peterbilt's Roses has been talking about breeding roses and the history of Peterbilt's roses and his connection with mechanics. The link between your mechanical desire when you were young and actually working here with roses. But now let's talk about something that listeners can take home with them. So some tips and stuff about growing roses at home.
Okay.
And can you briefly explain about the different types of roses mm-hmm. and how they can be grown in our gardens?
You've got climbing and rambling roses, then you've got old-fashioned shrub roses, then you've got the modern roses, a group of roses that, like Valentine's Day roses, you know, with the single flower at the end of the stem upright. Then you've got like patio roses and miniature roses. I mean, they're all, you know, different groups. I've lost. What's the question? Sorry.
Easy to lose yourself in rose speak, huh?
Yes.
It was just the different types of roses, and then how they would be used in our garden. So, for instance, Albertine. That's
a rambler,
and obviously I'm growing that up over something, over a wall.
Yeah.
And then the modern roses, how would you grow those?
Yeah, the modern roses, they can be grown in pots or they can be grown in borders. So, you know, if you've got your house and you've got a couple of little narrow borders, say a metre one side and a metre the other side, and you're walking up to your front door, then you'd have maybe modern roses through there, bright colours, good repeat flowering, and scented quite a lot of them. Now the old-fashioned shrub roses, going back to the moderns, they'll be about a metre high to 125, something like that. Now the old-fashioned shrub roses, they'd be a perennial mixed border. So if you've got, let's just use a panel fence at the back. So you've got a 6-foot panel fence and you've got a border in front of it, maybe, you know, 2 or 3 metres. So you could mix some of the shrub roses. Some of those will grow up to 2 metres. Other mm-hmm. shrub roses will only be a metre. Mm-hmm. But they sort of tend to be more relaxed and frothy, so to speak, rather than upright.
Yeah.
It's just a little rough guide. Mm-hmm.
And what about hybrid tea roses?
Yeah, the hybrid teas, like the modern roses, like, you know, as I say, mm-hmm. you're going down to your pathway, that you can also have a circular bed, you know, in the front garden, and you'd maybe plant them in a group of 3, 3, 3, in a circular bed, maybe like 4 metres, something like that.
Yeah.
So you've got masses of colour all throughout the summer.
Mm-hmm.
Then,
that's,
you
know,
great.
Then,
then you've got, you know, people say, well, you know, if you're then going into design purposes, who is right? Do you have one variety? You know, if you've got 12 roses in your circular bed, do you have one variety? Do you have groups of three? Mm. Or do you mm-hmm. have 12 different varieties? Everybody's individual. If the customer comes into the nursery, we want to find out more about them. So much information is important to get the right rose for the customer.
Definitely.
Yeah,
definitely. I think we usually do accompanying articles with each podcast issue.
Mm-hmm.
And I think probably this one will be the different types of roses and how to recognise them, where to grow them as well. Because I want to touch on another couple before we move on. We've got the flower carpet roses, which
are good.
Some amazing ground cover roses that are coming from a big licensing company in Australia called Tesla. They've done a great job on marketing those around the garden centres.
Tesla, not the car.
No, Tesla. And flower carpet are amazing because they're giving this kind of real ground cover effect on difficult areas, dry, sunny banks. But are they fragrant or not? They're not.
Generally, they're not.
Not as strong because you're growing them for the landscape look over the fragrance. But
and the other good thing about the flower carpet range is they tend to flower a little bit later. A lot of the roses tend to flower, you know, from mid-June, and certainly for their first flush, till the end of June, early July.
Okay.
And then you deadhead them and the repeat flowering ones will come again in September. But the flower carpet range generally don't start flowering until the end of June.
Uh-huh.
So we've got a lot of flower carpet roses in the garden as well. So when the first flush of the main roses are going over, the flower carpets are then coming into life.
Uh-huh. How high do they grow? How tall do they get?
They can vary. We've got some. It depends how they prune.
There's quite a few different ones in the range now.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, probably, forgive me, I keep going from feet and inches to metres. And I naturally, you know, sort of think of like 6 foot, 5 foot and so on. But
knee high. Let's call it knee high, shall we?
Yeah. Knee high.
Everyone knows where the knees are.
Yeah,
there you go.
They start at knee. What if you're really tall? Your knees will be higher.
Yeah, but they'll only be about 4 or 5 inches.
Well, that's just for Dutch listeners. So. Yeah.
but they're such a good group of roses, yes.
They're the roses you see on the kind of in amenity planting and on roundabouts, isn't it?
And there's also trim those with petrol hedge trimmers.
Oh, really?
So they're pruning. You don't have to worry about it.
We're going to come on to pruning shortly. Yes, yeah, that's really right. Useful.
Yeah.
The other one that is almost a sister line to that I've seen is the decorator rose, which is like the Calypso and the... Like for your eyes only. Have you seen those?
Oh,
ones?
Yes.
They're really beautiful. They're like a kind of old fashioned rose with an eye, but single flowered. So they're very glorious and vintage look, but again, spreading ground cover a bit.
Yeah, that's right. And they're very good for growing on patios and in tubs. You know, they're very good. They tend to be, you know, a lot smaller. The spread on those would be about sort of like 18 inches across.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, flower carpet range will spread anything to 3 to 4 feet.
Okay.
But these are very good for in the patio. It's a talking point because, I mean,
they've become very popular as a summer annual almost.
And as soon as, you know, we might have 50 to 100 for sale. And as soon as they crack open the buds, they are definitely. Such a talking point. And being they're only singles or semi-doubles, they're very bee-friendly as well. And, you know, they just look really good.
They've got that effect, but still bee-friendly. That's good. And one of them was a Rose of the Year, I think, a few years back.
For your eyes only, I think it was.
Maybe in the early 2000s, I believe. I got one more question on types of rose before we move on. The miniature roses that we often see as houseplants indoors.
Yes.
People often ask the question, can we plant those outdoors and what will they then do when we plant them outdoors?
Yeah.
What is the answer?
right. You know, with the typical little miniature roses you see in supermarkets and so
like
on.
Like gifting roses.
Yeah, that's right. They're usually like micro-propagated and there's usually about 10 plants altogether.
Uh-huh.
And they tend to
just like herbs. Just like when you buy herbs from the supermarket.
Yeah, that sort of thing. They're not grafted and they're just almost perfection. You know, they're almost artificial because they look so perfect. But they look good you know, and people bring them inside. Once they've finished, the answer to your question is, yes, you can put them outside. Uh-huh. But generally, they might last a couple of years and then they just sort of fade away because the vigour in them, they are bred and for the purpose of that one thing, like Mother's Day,
I can totally back that up. I've done that before. So someone had bought me a lovely pot. They were beautiful. The pink was, it was such a vibrant, gorgeous pink, and it did look perfect. And, you know, I thought, well, I'm just going to put it outside because I, you know, I'm not going to throw it away after I finish.
A lot of people will be wondering this.
It looked beautiful, and it did look beautiful, and it done very well for about 2 years, and then that was it.
Yeah.
And I just removed it then. So
they get mildew and one thing another. They are bred
very
for specific purpose
years.
Reasons.
But are they bred to be short, or they're treated with a dwarfing agent like Cycocel? They are actually dwarf.
They're dwarf, but they're also probably, I think they are also treated with an agent.
Yeah,
like
but it never
like
grew
plants.
Any taller. It never got any bigger.
No.
It was always
just
the
didn't
same.
Perform for you.
And it did flower the next year, but then the next year, the second year, it done nothing and it looked quite unwell.
But they often haven't got any fragrance either.
There was no fragrance.
Yeah,
no,
but there are a few breeders out there that are bringing those with fragrance. Like maybe Poulsen in Denmark.
Yes.
Roses Forever have some really nice ones as well coming through that are dwarf and fragrance. Yeah. So lots out there.
Now my passion for roses is heightened even more after talking to you both about this. Well, have you got some tips? So, like, what are your three main tips for growing roses at home? Kind of the three main things to think about.
Okay. Pruning.
Yeah.
That's a big fear of people. You know, when they come to pruning the roses in the winter, and you read the books and you say, outward facing bud, 45 degree angle, take out all disease, damage, dead wood, which you should do anyway, but have a goblet shape, and people, it's a fear, when it comes to pruning. But the most important thing is to prune it, because if you don't prune it, what'll happen, the rose will get taller and taller, you won't even be able to stand on your tiptoes and smell it, because, you know, if you haven't kept it shorter. So, I mean, it's a rough guideline. If you treated the majority of your roses and just cut 50% off, and you'd be fine. Even if you not shut your eyes, so to speak, you know, and you didn't look for the outward face. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying this is how you should do it.
Yeah, but people might worry about getting it wrong. If you do get it wrong, what's the worst that will happen? Perhaps what we're wondering.
Yeah. The worst thing that will happen is the shape of the bush, instead of being a lovely, it's like goblet shape, it might just be a little bit higgledy-piggledy, but in the summer, you won't notice.
Yeah.
Because it will just be full of foliage and flowers.
And so
full
it can't.
Of, so you wouldn't know anyway.
Yeah.
And
so
everybody, all your listeners, will be having wonderful roses in their gardens, whether they're expert pruners or not. Sometimes it's all too often put to say, you've got to do this and you've got to do that to get perfect roses. You know, lose the fear. Tip one. I'm trying to think of tip two and tip three.
keep talking while he's thinking.
Okay. Tip two.
What about feeding?
Yeah, tip two. The most important thing is keeping the plant moist. Plenty of water. If we're having a dry spell, water your roses rather than your grass. Your grass will come back. But the more you look after the rose and water it, then it's going to reward you with having lovely flowers and health as well. Then you won't have to spray for diseases quite so much. Mm-hmm. The other thing is when you're choosing your roses, try and choose as healthy varieties
in the first place.
Yeah.
But hopefully, most varieties that are now sold, newer varieties, would be disease resistant.
Yeah, they're a lot. That's a strong word, disease resistant, because
tolerant.
Yeah, you'll have good and bad years with roses, and same with plants. And you can bring out the rose in this year, and within maybe 8 to 10 years, because it's just got slightly older, and each time that you bud the rose, you're then it's getting slightly weaker, and then so after about 8 to 10 years, some of them will get a little bit weaker, but some of them have been around for hundreds of years. We've got like Rosa Mundi, dates back to the 12th century.
Yeah, it's
still a good rose.
One.
Gets a little bit of mildew here and there, but we've got try and think. The more we ask of a rose, the more that you can begin to get problems, because if you look around your gardens in the height of May and June, and they're just coming out into flower, you'll see no black spot whatsoever, hardly anything, unless it's a really bad variety. Once it's had its first flush, and then you deadhead it, then it's got to re-flower again in August, September time. Well, if you don't feed it, water it, a lot of people, we're all so busy,
and then
it starts, we then start getting phone calls around July time saying, my rose has got a little bit of black spot on it. Mm. Well, it's starving a little bit, it needs moisture, it needs feeding, so therefore it'll become a little bit healthier.
Right.
But isn't there also, you can spray them before the risk of black spot, almost as a tonic with sulphur, is that right?
Yes, there's a tonic.
As a preventative almost.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Does that work?
Yes.
Yeah.
Generally it works.
Okay.
It's rather than look and wait, once you've got the black spot, then it's a bit harder. It's almost impossible then to get rid of it. So if you can set yourself up as a spray program, with some of these tonics,
and you start doing that when
end of April time, mid April, as they're starting to show. But then you start doing that. You're doing it every fortnight. Where do you draw the line on?
Yeah.
Looking after something and enjoying it, where it becomes a not a nightmare, but becomes...
As long as it becomes a habit, because you are preventing that disease. So,
But
the choice is...
Feeding and watering through the summer with some of that tonic, should keep it. you some good healthy roses. And people say, well, how often do you feed? Well, what we tend to say around February when you're pruning them, I tend to say a good handful of fertiliser around the plant, February, early March, something like that. The ground is warming up. As the fertiliser goes down, the roots are beginning to grow, so therefore they'll take in the all the trace elements.
Mm-hmm.
Then after it's finished flowering in June, deadhead, another handful over the top, so it's again slow-release fertiliser. And if you can remember three or four times during the summer months, you know, with like tomato feed is very good, or Maxicrop with added iron, but tomato feed is very good. Say three or four times during the summer, you'll have good roses.
Okay.
Great. Tip three?
Yeah, I was waiting for that one.
Did you think I'd forgotten?
Tip three.
What's
okay.
about deadheading? Or...
Deadheading. Yeah, that's another. That's that. Thank you for.
That's what I'm here for.
Yeah, a good tip on deadheading because again, all too often people will come along and just break the top bud off. If it's a rose that has about four flowers at the end, it's quite nice walking through the garden. One of the flowers on the end of that stem is finished flowering, so you take that one off, deadhead that one, and then the other three will then come along. Another week later, that one is gone, you deadhead that. When the whole cluster is finished, don't just break the tops off of the other two. Do a what we call a summer prune. I suppose taking it down to... You've roughly taken off about 8 to 10 inches. And what's that in centimetres? Because you're nice and young. Come on, Alan.
10 inches is 25 centimetres.
Thank you. roughly take off about 25 centimetres, from this
mm-hmm.
From the stem. And then a new bud. Because if you don't take that 25 centimetres off, all the energy will go up the stem and try to flower... Which has already been used by the other bud. You're wasting time.
So that's the best way to actually deadhead.
Yeah.
That's really good tip.
What about another tip? Should we? I've thought of another one.
Oh, well, go for it. 3A. Another one. Yeah, 3A. That's it. 3A. Go for it.
Last tip when you're planting. All too often, again, you read the books, and it's a bit controversial. With sometimes they'll say plant the graft above the ground. Others will say plant the graft below the ground. What we tend to say is plant the graft roughly about an inch below the ground. Well done. If you plant the graft an inch above the ground, so that the actual cluster of the rose... It's difficult to say it over the radio, but with the cluster of the actual stems, when it starts getting established, that'll rock. Right. And it's called wind rock.
Yeah.
If you plant it nice and deep, that anchors them into the ground.
Yeah.
And as they're starting to grow, they then start... The rose, you know, starts tending to, you know, to go up anyway. So therefore,
I'm
it works
so
as well.
I'm so pleased to hear this.
All too often, you get wind rock.
That's
not
good.
I think we'll need you to write us some diagrams and we'll put those up on the website.
We need diagrams, definitely.
I wanted to ask about growing roses on a patio. All the types of roses that you went through earlier. Could we grow any type of rose on the patio with a pot big enough?
Yes, you could.
So even a rambler?
Even a rambler or a climber. Okay. Yeah, no problem.
So how big would the pot need to be on some of those more vigorous types of rose?
It's a rough example, like a half beer barrel size.
Okay.
So you can get a picture of that. So you're looking probably 30, 45 centimetres, something like that. You can have climbers or ramblers, and that, you know, the important thing with the containers, and I can't stress this enough, is water.
Mm-hmm.
Because you get the height of the summer, you've got the sun beating down on the patio. It's, you know, and especially if you've got a clay pot, it's on the pot, and you know people don't water them enough. If they're watered well, they'll thrive well. But you can use climbers and ramblers. You know, we have planting and pruning days here, and we show examples of. Like an obelisk, you put an obelisk and you have rats
around.
Yeah. Well, another thing, ground cover roses. You know, a pot, when people talk about pots, they talk about, or you might think a pot, in your mind, you're thinking like a bucket, so to speak, that sort of, that side of things. But, you know, if you think outside the box, a pot is a container which can be like four car tyres put together. That's a container.
Yeah.
A bathtub. We've seen
you're
things like that.
Containing
a chimney,
the soil and the
chimney
roots,
pot.
Aren't you?
And then you can have...
That's nice.
You can have ground cover roses, little that's cascade nice. Over the down the chimney.
Or even in hanging baskets.
Lovely. There we go, yeah. That's it, yeah. And in baskets yeah. as well.
You know, I said earlier on that I'd bought Rose Albertine from yep. here. Well, and that was planted in our old garden, then we moved house, so I took cuttings from it. I'd never taken rose cuttings before, yeah. but they all rooted, yeah. and they're great. And the Rose Albertine I now have in a container yeah. in my back garden.
Lovely.
And it grows up the back, mm. on some trellis up the back of the house, and it's done absolutely brilliantly well.
And
it's absolutely fine. The roses aren't as big.
No, that's right, from a cutting.
They're not flowering. Yeah, I wouldn't cut them. They're not as big, but they're still very beautiful.
Oh, that's fine.
Yeah.
And a way, people, another common question asked is, you know, how often should I change the soil?
Mm-hmm.
And generally, we sort of say, you know, every 3 or 4 years. Or when the rose, the first couple of years, like your Albertine might be doing well now.
Yeah.
I don't know when you put it in and it started
last
to flower.
Last year. Yeah.
Okay. And then when it gets to about 6 feet high in this container, and it might be year 3, it might just then start looking a little bit sad and weak, a little bit of disease. You know, that's the time when you think, okay, it's looking a little bit sad. It's been in this pot for, say, 3 years. What I'm going to do in the winter, so if you do it in November and December time,
yeah,
take all the compost out, shake all the roots off and repot it,
right,
and put it back. You watch the following year, it'll be so much so much nicer.
Fabulous.
So roughly about every 3 years, and then every year maybe just take a handful, a top 2 inches out mm-hmm. of the top, you know, and just replace compost and with top rose or bone meal, a little bit of fertilizer.
Good.
Great.
Can I just jump back on what we said there? Because Ellen took cuttings of a rose, but then you said, oh, the flowers are smaller than they would be. Is that?
That's because it was in a container.
Oh, that's yeah.
not because it wasn't grafted.
It was,
yeah. No, it's because it's in a container.
Yeah,
right?
Well, in a container, that can make them smaller, but also with cuttings, especially on until they get established,
yeah.
you know, they can be, you know, slightly smaller. Taking cuttings take very well, say, from ramblers.
Mm-hmm.
Here at the nursery, and most rose nurseries, they're actually budded. And the other thing is that they're actually budded or grafted onto a rootstock, and they will mm-hmm. give you the vigour. So we
because
can
the rootstock is always an... older, stronger, established variety. Is that what it is?
Yes, it's an older variety that, you know, there's things like Rosa Canina, there's Rosa Laxa. That is a... All our roses, the majority of our roses, should I say, are budded on Rosa Laxa. Mm-hmm. It's like the hedgerow rose.
Okay.
You know, if that just flowered on its own, it'd be a little single white or very mm-hmm. pale pink flower. The vigour of that particular mm-hmm. variety is so good that we, you know, it's produced in millions, you know, by, you know, the Dutch and so on. And we have got some English breeders of rootstocks. And then mm-hmm. we put our varieties onto there. And then within a year, you can get a nice saleable plant. Having said, mm-hmm. with your cuttings, that will take you another, probably 2 years to get an established rose from a cutting.
So it gives you that head start.
That gives you
well.
That head start. And also with cuttings, you have to be careful that when they suck, they can romp through the garden mm-hmm. on their own roots.
Okay.
But there we go, in a container, you know, that would be fine. There's advantages and disadvantages.
Yeah, it's just interesting to ask because people probably heard that phrase to do with roses before, grafting, budding, etc.
Yeah.
So it's nice to go over that a little bit. Where else are we?
We were just saying about, I wouldn't be able to cut those Albertines because they're just not really big enough. But do you have any tips for cuttings for roses?
Cut flowers, she means. Ellen, you've lost your mind.
What was I talking about? Yeah.
Cut flowers. Yeah, roses, you know, you see, don't generally, especially garden roses, only tend to last 3 or 4 days in a vase, no matter what.
Yeah.
There might be an odd variety here and there, but generally only last 3 or 4.
Is there any way to increase that by bashing the stem or?
Well, I mean,
grandma used to do that.
That sounds really cruel.
Yeah, with a big mallet.
That sounds cruel.
Because it opens up, so you can. So
yeah,
it can
I mean, you can put like Chrysal in the water, even mm-hmm. lemonade is very good,
okay.
you know, for the roses. But mm-hmm. probably a good tip would be, if you're going to cut roses from your garden, would be to cut a few more than you want, not just 2 or 3 stems, maybe mm-hmm. cut about a dozen, and draw them in close together at the top. Tie a bit of string or rubber band so that they can, so you're keeping them snug and warm so that they won't, the petals won't drop off.
Ah,
that will make them last
cool.
a lot longer.
Oh,
so keep them
close
together.
Yeah. Yeah,
I love that he did a demo as
that
well.
That was good, wasn't it?
Being snug, he like hugged himself.
I honestly wish that you guys could see this at home because Ian did just hug himself.
Because what is strange, and something that people may be realising at home, is they may have bought a bouquet of roses and then they don't smell or they don't last very long. So why, you know, when you buy roses from a garage forecourt, can you expect them to be quality? Why don't they have fragrance?
They're quality, and when you buy them from supermarkets and garages and so on, and they are lovely. They're perfect. They are bred specifically for that reason and that trade, where you've got long stems.
But only to look good, not smell good.
Yeah,
and it seems crazy.
Although it does seem crazy because you know the instinct that you, when you have a rose, you draw yourself close to it.
You immediately want to smell it.
But if it was that easy, you know, going back to my, for us breeding, we have 50,000 seeds every year. And I said we could only get maybe 10 plants good enough to launch in 10 years' time. It'll be no different with the guys in Kenya and the Dutch, you know, because if they could have bred a rose, that would be their top priority. And believe me, they will be wanting to do that, to get them onto the forecourts, you know, with that scent.
We all have
to ask that question. Why isn't it? If it was possible and easy, they would have done it by now, wouldn't they?
Yeah, but it's too big a market to ignore, isn't it?
Oh, it is.
But that does bring us on to a question about fragrance. And we wanted to ask about, there's a thing called a fragrance pyramid, which was released by a company in France a few years ago, called Delbar.
Delbar's, yeah.
And because roses don't all smell the same, do they?
And different people can pick up different scents of smell. You've got the citrusy, the sort of smell. You've got myrrh scent. Mm-hmm. I think there's about the five different sort of scents of smell. I mean, there's a variety which is a climbing rose that is called Alchemist, and I say it's got a wonderful fragrance, but my wife can't smell it.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, we all pick up different scents of smell. Generally in the catalogue, we will get, you know, and same with Delbar's, they have this, pyramid where, you know, you've got something really, really fragrant, and then it sort of like goes down the scale, but there are different scents, and you just, you know, everybody is different. And there are different scents of smell. You know, like I said, you know, it's... some are sweet sort of scent, some are citrusy, and some have got this myrrh scent, which is an unusual sort of fragrance.
I think my favourite rose of fragrance, I don't know if this name is even right now, because it was quite a few years ago, I think it's Etoile du Holland.
Climber.
That one, the Climber.
Well,
the
we
fragrance
did Bush and Climber.
Was amazing. Is absolutely...
You can buy one on the way out.
It is absolutely stunning. Now, I don't know if I should touch on this, if I dare touch on this. Okay. So what do you think of rainbow roses? The multi-coloured roses.
The ones that you're talking about, are you the ones that you see that, you know, in like in the catalogue with, I mean, are we talking like bicolour roses, or are we talking like these?
The ones that are completely like a rainbow that you see as a cut flower.
Yeah, you can buy them as a cut flower, and they're like loads of different colours.
Yeah.
Are they
I've seen them in catalogues, and it's fantastic what you can do with a catalogue, you know, and you have these rainbow coloured roses, but I haven't actually... come out into, as far as I know, there's, you know, things like masquerade. It goes from yellow and red.
Oh, no, that's more a colour changing. Okay. No, we'll have to show you a picture of these.
Please.
But they're,
I don't
honestly,
think you're going to like them.
They're almost
let
me find... No, I'm going to find a picture right now because we need your live reaction to this.
I don't think you're going to like them.
I would like to see, you know, somebody bring one into the nursery for us to actually see. And
someone brought one in and said, can you tell me what this variety is?
That's right.
Hey, are you ready? Are you ready? We're going to show you rainbow rose and see what you think of this.
Okay.
Ready? Don't be shocked.
Oh, dear. Now, come on. That is...
How have they done that?
Easily.
It's just dyed.
IT departments. When I do lectures, I've got...
These are real.
Yeah.
That's just dyed.
Yeah, I don't know. If any of your listeners are listening and they've got a rose like this, literally like a rainbow, isn't it? We're talking, and they're bright colours. I've just seen this photograph. And
the cut ones are dyed, definitely. They're cut roses and then they're dyed. Yeah. They're obviously not meant to be like that. But just moving on from that. We don't want to upset you any further.
That's horrible.
Roses do have quite a lot of uses, don't they? Other than looking beautiful and smelling wonderful, you know, they're used in medicines, aren't they? And the rose hips can be used, that kind of thing as well. You know, what do you know about the edible uses of roses?
Well,
or the medicinal uses?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, sometimes when we go to, you know, either go to shows or like Chelsea Flower Show and places like, you know, that and, you know, when... you know, you've got like these champagne do's. You see rose petals going in the champagne and so on.
You don't do that at home.
No, I can't afford champagne.
You can afford rose petals though.
Yeah.
Going on to that, I mean I've got
several, you know, friends, and you know, when they're now they're the next generation, you know, beginning to, you know, get married, and they're saying, you know, can I have some rose petals? Yes, no problem. When you've got like 250,000 roses to choose from, as long as they're getting married in June, July and August, honestly, it'd take me about half an hour to get a sack full of petals.
Wow.
And when we go, you know, you can imagine, I say to all the guests, and you grab a handful and you throw them up in the air.
Beautiful.
And the scent and so on is amazing. Yeah. So
it makes me want to get married all over again. I know that roses are very good for you. They're very calming, very relaxing, aren't they? Rose water is really good for your skin.
And there's an increased interest in edible flowers.
Yeah.
I've seen them used in baking, so they look lovely on top of cakes. Petals look lovely on cakes. So really, we can have, you know, roses in the garden. They're beautiful. We can eat them. We can help ourselves, lower our anxiety, and have a calming environment with roses. So you must be the most calm.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Relaxed, working with nature.
He's not. Now we showed him the rainbow rose.
No, that's right.
He looks a bit wound up.
Might need to go home and have a beer.
That's it. I mean, they're such a marvellous plant because they are so versatile.
Yeah.
You know, the first flowers of the rose will come out, for example, something like canary bird, Rosa banksia lutea. You know, you can get those out mid-April time. And the last ones that will keep on flowering, you know, through until January, February. I mean, I've seen things like iceberg, as a good floribunda, has been flowering off and on throughout the summer. The flower carpet range, a lot of those are still in flower around Christmas time. So, you know, months and months, you know, of flowers,
real lovely,
you know, coming through. Yeah. They're climbing roses. You've got, you know, them on patios. We've discussed this. They're just so versatile.
Amazing. You love roses, we can tell.
Is that right?
Yeah. And I think, you know, you won me over. I think roses probably do win over tree peonies.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Where can we find you? Social media, it's all Peter Beals Roses, and the website is classicroses.co.uk. I know this because I go on it quite a lot.
If you want, you pick up, you know, the telephone, and there's always somebody at the end, you know, being able to give you good, solid advice.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. You know, brilliant. So, thank you.
Excellent.
If you're any listeners are at any of the shows this year as well, you're at most of the shows too with your exhibitions and show gardens. So thank you so much, Ian.
You're very welcome.
Brilliant. Thank you.
Thank you.
What are we going to talk about today? Scents.
Cents.
Not having
cents. Well, as in dollar and cents.
No, not even that. Wow, there's so many different things you can mean when you say cents, because it could mean that. It could mean sense, like in having sense, like being clever.
Yeah.
Or it could mean like the senses, or it could mean sense. This is driving people crazy, I'm sure.
Which could mean S-C-E-N-T-S,
sense, which is aromas. Fragrances. We're going to talk about fragrances today. Hit it, Ellen. I feel like a DJ. Come on, talk about scents. Fragrances.
Do you have a favourite fragrance? Do you?
No, tons of flowers.
Anything.
They're all amazing.
Anything.
Like sweet peas are obviously very unique fragrance, which is lovely, sweet, sticky, la la la. Lilies are a bit,
not into lilies.
A bit
fragrance.
Too sweet, but a bit overpowering. Geez.
Yeah. Hyacinths I can't have in the house.
Really?
It's too much.
You want to try Midnight Mystic, the black one. It has more of a spicy fragrance.
Okay.
Like cinnamon. Yeah.
Okay, it's nice.
What do you like then?
Well, there's two things that stand out for me. One is grass after the rain.
Grass. Yeah, that's a good
that
one.
That lovely, fresh, nature, outdoorsy smell after the rain. I love that. When it's still warm, because you get that lovely.
Yeah, true.
And it's a classic, but roses.
Uh-huh, that's nice.
There's so many different
fragrances of roses.
So there
it's
was
quite layered fragrances as well.
Etoile de Holland. Uh-huh. And the first time I ever smelt that was at Bulwark Hall in Norfolk. Yeah. And it's a climber?
Yeah.
A rambler climber. And it's up the side of the house, uh-huh, or the hall.
Cool.
And the fragrance was mind-blowing.
Oh my gosh. That's cool. Oh, I think our pizza just arrived. Are you going to run for it?
I'm going to run for it.
And I'm going to carry on talking about fragrance to the microphone. So, what other fragrances do I love? Ooh, jasmine seems like an obvious one. But have you seen Jasmine Sambac, which is the double flowered one? That's a really sexy one. What else? What about fragrances we don't like? Amorphophallus is obviously famous one that stinks a lot. Also Fritillaria Imperialis, the Crown Imperial. That fragrance, I always think that smells of Twiglets. Or Eucovis.
Fritillaria.
Pineapple lily. Oh, you're back. Here's the pizza.
One of my favourite fragrances, pizza.
Yeah. Have you ever felt, smelt Fritillaries?
No.
It's a very odd fragrance.
I really have.
It's kind of musky.
Okay.
It's a real... It's the great divider of man, I think. You'll either love that fragrance or you hate it. Yeah. It's a strange one.
Okay.
Eucomas, though, have you smelled those?
Yeah.
They smell of Twiglets.
Yeah.
You know, the crisp.
The honeybush. The
Melianthus.
When you rub the leaves, it smells like peanut butter.
Yeah, and not even honey. So that's really bad marketing, isn't it?
I wonder why it's called that. Maybe they thought it smelled like honey to begin with.
What about pineapple flavours from Cytisus batanderii? That
smells like pineapple.
Definitely. And of course, you've got all the different mints with all their different fragrances as well.
Stocks. I like Stocks.
Yeah. Oh, Stocks, yeah. Yes, that's amazing. That's real nose clearing.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
To be honest, I quite like herbs. I love it when you really bruise the leaves.
Lemon verbena is the best fragrance.
Oh, it's just lovely.
Any lemony flavour.
Great in tea as well.
Eucalyptus,
when we're talking about that kind of thing. If you hang some eucalyptus in the shower and let it steam and you get
super
that
cool.
lovely smell.
Always remember, talk about lemon verbena. I always remember having this really gorgeous tea when I was travelling in Israel for work a few years ago. And it was this real medley of beautiful leaf flavours, like pineapple sage type thing, lemon verbena. And I never quite knew what that flavour was, but I just remember it even now, how special it was.
Right.
I remember trying to recreate that flavour then at home with my different herbs that you just couldn't get close to. It just was impossible.
One herb that I don't like the smell of is sage.
Sage, really?
Can't
sage is lovely.
And even some of salvias that have a similar fragrance, like salvia, the Nemorosa.
Yeah.
I can't bear
but some
the
of them,
of that.
What is it? Blaperophylla has like a blackcurranty fragrance.
Yes.
And some of those like Hot Lips, I think, has a
blackcurrant
fragrance
a real citrusy one. I can't remember the name of it now. But, oh my goodness, I've got it in the garden. Every time I walk out the back door, I can smell it throughout the summer. And that's beautiful. It's a lovely smell. But it's the ones that are very sagey. No, I'm not digging that very much.
Really? I've started to eat more sage, really.
Yeah,
just
I'm
like
not a fan.
In salads or as a topping. Yeah.
Super good for you.
Full
of nutrients. Brilliant.
But thyme, do you like the taste of thyme?
Yes, I
the fragrance
quite
is
like
nice,
thyme.
But the taste is very, because it's got like antiseptic qualities. It really is quite tart on the tongue.
I can't quite like that. But I like gooseberries. I kind of like that.
Yeah, maybe you're Italian. Did you know genetically
I am
Italians?
Italian.
No way.
Yeah.
Because they genetically enjoy bitter flavours more. So things like the Campari, espresso, kind of radicchio, all of those bitter flavours, I think, is proven that Italians have that different genetics.
There you go. It's in my genes.
They enjoy that kind of more bitter flavour. So, yeah.
Mm, there we go.
Interessante.
Today's podcast partner is VeggiePod, the integrated all-in-one garden bed, suitable for anyone interested in growing your own. You'll be amazed at how quickly your vegetables grow in a VeggiePod. And as a special offer for our listeners, VeggiePod are offering PPP subscribers 10% off any sized VeggiePod when purchased with a stand or a trolley. Simply go to veggiepod.co.uk and enter PBP10 on checkout.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Plant-Based Podcast.
Have a browse of the rest of the library or hop on over to the website, which is theplantbasedpodcast.net.
You'll also find our social media links. Please connect with us and let us know about any plant-based projects that you think we should be covering on the show.
And make sure you subscribe to our podcast so you'll be the first to hear the next episode. We're releasing once a fortnight. So until next time, enjoy the world of plants.